Philosophers. Well, today we're going to talk about something that, while it may not be super prominent now, I think will become a lot more prominent, and that is biological enhancements.
And the ethics thereof.
Now, I think it's important, especially when we're in a fringe field like this, to kind of outline what we mean when we say biological enhancements, and I definitely think they come in the form of like a tiered system, or they come on a spectrum of it, you know, primitive to advanced. Because you can make the argument that we already have such things, you know, like...
we certainly do, yeah.
There's the temporary, you know, adrenal boosts, you know, things that you just take a shot or you know, like a performance-enhancing drug.
I don't know that I would classify that as a biological enhancement.
Okay.
Because that's just a drug. I don't think that drugs qualify necessarily.
Okay. And I'm fine with leaving them out, too. I just want to find the boundaries.
Sure.
So...
I'm thinking, so as far as biological enhancements that we have now, well, we'll begin with the most overt type, which currently we are not doing to humans, which is genetic modification.
Mm-hmm. We do this all the time with, like, our food.
Yes.
And there's
you know what's a lot better than spraying pesticides all over everything?
Letting them grow their own pesticides.
Yes.
And with some of those, okay, now, are we talking about artificial enhancements or are we talking about selective bred enhancements?
Because I am talking about artificial things where someone intentionally enhanced something biologically, because if something happens by like happenstance, like there's no ethics involved here at all because there's not a moral agent at work.
Well, no, what I'm saying though is, how humans cultivated like modern corn.
Mm-hmm.
There are people at work. Modern corn would not be the way, like modern corn is domesticated.
I don't think that domestication counts as biological enhancement either.
Okay. I'm just making sure we're not including that. So we're talking about what most people I think when you think GMOs, genetically modified. And that's where they take a gene sequence out of a tobacco plant, which produces natural pesticides, for example, and then splice that into cells of, like, corn. Yep. And then now that corn and its offspring, once cloned...
will naturally grow that, or produce that chemical.
Naturally produce that chemical. Okay, and then we're going to take that concept and we're going to apply it to people. I think what we're really talking about... should we talk about the ethics of biological enhancements for people or just in general?
I think that is where it is most relevant to talk about it.
Why do... with people, okay.
Yes,
I would assert that it shouldn't matter that human beings aren't any more special necessarily than other animals, and that the only key difference being that is if a person is willing, it shouldn't be any different than an animal that cannot consent.
Well, so something about biological enhancements, because if somebody, if you get a surgery done or something to enhance yourself, I'm not quite certain that qualifies either. So the kind of thing that I think of when I think of biological enhancements is genetic modification. So, and if we follow the rabbit hole all the way down to where people start to worry about it and becomes an ethical issue, we get to things, the term has been coined, designer babies.
Okay. So let's go ahead and narrow that then.
Right. I'm a wealthy person, and so I want to... you know, hand pick the genes that my child will have to make them the perfect person.
Okay. So just to go ahead and box ourselves in to what we're actually talking about, we're really talking about the ethics of the ethics of genetic design on humans. Genetic design and alterations on human beings.
Yes.
By human beings.
Right, so this would be this is genetic engineering, basically.
Okay.
Because
we had hormone treatment listed.
We did.
Do we want to just...
Upon further consideration, I think hormone treatment does still apply. It's just not quite to the same degree.
Sure. Because you
are, because it's more limited.
It is way more limited, and you're essentially coaxing your body to modify itself in some instances.
Right, but you can still get the same effect, really. Like, if I want to become stronger quicker, then right. I can take hormones as I do what anyone else would do to build muscle, and I get an advantage okay. over a normal person.
So, let's talk a little bit about maybe... Because this already kind of happens. It does. Already exists.
Yep.
So I think we should talk a little bit about what it looks like now and how people feel about it, or, you know, what we've observed.
Sure.
There's obviously, there is somewhat of a stigma around it, I would say, in certain applications, and then there isn't in other applications.
Right.
The two I'm going to go ahead and cite are, obviously, hormone therapy in athletes is seen as unfair and it's frowned upon because it's not genuine effort being exerted to achieve higher levels of strength, or you're doing something.
But not only, I don't even think it's necessarily because you didn't have to work as hard. I think people do care about that, but I don't think that's the real sticking issue. I think the thing is that hormone treatment or therapy, when used in sports, can actually be used to push the upper bounds of a person. You can become a super athlete and be better than any normal person could become.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think that's where part of it is lies as well. The issue I take with that is why that is bad, necessarily, because, I mean, there's a part of me that would absolutely love to, and I don't really watch contact competitive sports very much. But I might if I knew that two MMA fighters that were pushing the boundaries of what the human body was capable of. And I'm
yes,
not...
I think that I have different feelings about it based on context as well. Yeah, for entertainment sports, like let's take, for instance, basketball. Yep. Basketball is an entertainment sport.
Yes.
I mean, obviously the athletes are still very skilled and they're showing off their skills. But what makes basketball interesting is seeing what the athletes can do.
Yes.
On the court.
Yeah, you
and
don't...
so if you see somebody who can leap, you know, 5 feet into the air or higher to, you know, pull off a stunt, that's interesting. And if somebody, you know, used hormone therapy to do that, who cares? I'm having a good time at the show.
Right. And that's how I would feel about it. I'm not particularly partial to basketball, but I totally understand.
Me neither, really. But
the same sentiment for me would be something that I would be interested in watching. And that is like mixed martial arts, for example,
yes.
Because I'm already watching people that are subjecting themselves to punishment that I never want to be subjected to, but also dealing it, watching the competitive nature of that. It is in both instances is a mixture of both your ability to, well, it's both your ability, you know, your skill and mm-hmm. your talents and execution of them.
Yes.
And that's what's so interesting about it. I think I agree that most people's sentiment and problem is that you're going beyond what anyone that chose not to do that.
Right. Well, and where this becomes a problem, I think the context is in, like, when we move beyond entertainment and move into competitive sport, like Olympic Games, where you're trying to set records,
right?
And show, you know, that you are the best, whatever thing there is.
Right. And I'm going to go ahead and jump off here and say I have two huge problems with both of these things.
Okay.
The first one is talent and... talent and what talent really means. I'm going to go ahead and define it. The way I've always viewed talent is your predisposition towards being better at something
yep.
than other people. It's you can achieve with less effort a higher level of competency in something than a person who is not talented.
Yes.
So, for example, if you are a talent, like there are people who are, like, they'll just take basketball because that's a great example.
Sure.
Some people short.
Yeah.
Some people tall.
Yep.
And you cannot necessarily choose those things at birth. They are predetermined
right.
by your genetic makeup.
Mostly.
But by the nature of the rules of the sport, people who are tall, because you are trying yeah. to achieve an objective.
They get an advantage. They're standing still closer to the goal.
Right. And so it's already not something anyone can be as proficient at. Now, don't get me wrong. I know there are short basketball players that do perform very well. And in some ways, that's more admirable because you can appreciate the effort they put forward if you are a true follower.
To be better than
somebody
who is a foot or more taller than them, yeah.
But that's not as, and that might be entertaining for some people. But when we're talking about just achieving the goal as fast, but when you look at most of these records, it's achieve the goal either as fast as possible, or it's a marked distance or some, it's some measurement, and it's pushing that measurement as far as you can. Or right. As short as you can in some cases. Like,
right. Either as fast as possible or as extremely as possible.
Exactly. So it's already not fair. And so to say that, well, if you were to use hormones, it would be unfair. It's already unfair, but
we're not all the same.
We're not all the same.
So that is interesting.
That's my first.
Yes. Right. Before we move on to the second, what's interesting about that is that this raises the question of what are we trying to measure with something like the Olympic Games? Are we trying to measure the limits of what something we would call human can do at all? Or are we measuring the limits of what nature can produce without other interference? That's all subjective. It's not written anywhere what the goal of the Olympics is.
Right. And to be honest, I would even be okay with segregating and having divisions for these types of things like we already do. Like a good example of where this already happens is in fighting a lot. We already recognize that it is not fair to have a person who is naturally predisposed to have larger muscle mass and just happens to naturally weigh 350 pounds with the same amount of workout effort because they're also 6.5 feet tall, have longer arms, bigger muscles because that's how they're built. And then have the same, and then take another guy who's 5 foot tall and can, at his most, muster 180 pounds of muscle. We don't let them fight each other competitively. We separate them in divisions. And then obviously the biggest division separation, men and women. We don't generally put men and women in the same competitive sports, yep. Especially when physicality is the major component.
I was going to get back around to that, but go on with your second thing.
I kind of almost already forgot my
second
thing.
Well, maybe you will remember your second thing.
I think I will. Give me a minute. But
so on the topic of segregating based on gender, you know, a lot of people get upset about gender segregation for reasons. But then we run into something. Here's a real controversial thing when it comes to biological. Well, this wouldn't necessarily be an enhancement per se, but a biological alteration. People who undergo hormone therapy because they are transgender.
Yes.
And particularly the one that matters is transitioning from male to female and then wanting to compete in sports.
Yes, because you cannot undo the effects of hormones that you have previously been under the effect of, necessarily.
Right. And then, but also, now, here's something else. So, you know, we can say, like, okay, if we take it back to just one gender, let's take males, for example. We can say, okay, you may not like that so-and-so is taking steroids to build muscle mass quicker, but no one's stopping you from doing that to be just as good as they are. Cool. Problem. Okay, and this is more of a problem for females, I think, just because of the particular hormones that are involved that are good for building muscle mass, is you can screw up your biology.
Yes.
By taking such hormones.
Mm-hmm.
You can become stronger, but you can really screw yourself up for other things that you care about.
Exactly. Like, you can rob yourself of the ability to be fertile.
Right.
And that's one of the biggest ones that particularly affects women.
I think that can affect men too, but it's definitely riskier for women.
It's definitely riskier because it's the ability to undo it, you know, or the inability to undo the effects.
Right. So you have somebody who, you know, let's say underwent male puberty and then decided to transition and become a female. Cool. But now, so what do we say to all the biological women who want to compete,
right,
with this person?
Well, and I guess that was my second point. It goes along with what I consider to be talent, and that is just natural biological differences between people. Talent is just the way those things are expressed, but those underlying differences are already varied because they are, because of genetic diversity. You can't be helped, you know, and I don't necessarily, and granted, I do think that one of the big bones that people pick with hormone therapy is that the transgender people that have a problem with people transitioning and then trying to compete within a new division, that aside, if you were to just take it, people who are all biologically similar, the differences, generally speaking, are not that far apart. And so things are within the acceptable boundaries of tolerance that you could theoretically maybe overcome them if you, but only if the other person put forth less effort than you did. And I've actually heard that said, you know, there have been people who I've talked to who appreciate a particular sportsman or sportswoman, I guess, because
an athlete.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Because they aren't talented. Because of the amount of effort they've had to demonstrate, that's admirable.
Oh yes. We love underdog stories.
Yes. Yes. In a different way. And then I want to hit on something you'd said, because it's also one of a point that I've heard that is an interesting thing to think about, and that is, well, you could do it, and that's really, I think, another thing that it comes down to is when it comes to things that affect your body and your choice to do these things, right? People get, they don't like being told, well, why don't you just do steroids then? Even if they were perfectly legal, there'd be people who would refuse to do them because they have their own personal hangups about it. And they would be left behind in the sport if the sport still allowed for it. And they would say that it's unfair because of they're being confronted with a choice that they don't like the outcomes. And I kind of want to address that, the people that feel that way. And I want to be respectful, but it's tough. And that's all I got to say. It's tough. You know, if you don't like it, and if you're not willing to do what it takes to be competitive, and it's not just in sports. If you think that it's wrong to, like, if, in any other place in a market, you need to be prepared to do whatever anyone else is doing to get an advantage, even if you have a hang-up about it. And it's all a risk, you know.
But also, other side of that coin, if you have a hang-up about it, chances are you're not the only one who has a hang-up about it.
Right.
And so I think that your idea of having divisions is a better idea.
I agree.
That we can just have a non-hormone treated division.
I agree. And
one thing that came to mind, which is only barely analogous, but it's enough to make the point. Video game speedrunning.
Yeah, I was going to actually bring that up. Wasn't going to bring up speedrunning.
Okay.
But
it's sort of, were you going to bring up like fighting game competitions or something? So video game speedrunning, for those who may not know what that is, in brief, usually playing a video game to whatever can be called the end as quickly as possible. Usually. There are many exceptions, but anyway, in the early days, a lot of people had hang-ups about using known bugs and glitches in video games to get a speed advantage. But the fact is, it's part of the game.
Yes.
So if you are claiming really to be able to do it faster, well, you can do it faster by doing that. But then people will cry, well, that's cheating. The speedrunning community's solution to that was categories. There is the definitive category, usually called any percent, which is get it done as fast as you can, however you want to do it, so long as you get to what we will decide is the end. And then there is also glitchless, or it, whatever game it may be, they may call it something else. And there are people who like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to go watch it, they can go watch that or play that if they want to play that game.
Yeah. I was actually going to provide a different example, but it was more along the lines of our original discussion about performance-enhancing drugs. Well, it's not performance-enhancing drugs, and it doesn't really, it's not really the same thing, I guess. I was going to say people who, you know, in the gaming community abuse substances like Adderall, for example, to have an advantage, but that's more along the lines of steroids.
That's a temporary advantage.
So that's in the competitive environment. I think, now let's talk also about the, I want to delineate talent from biological enhancements in one way that's very important. One is that biological enhancements, theoretically, anyway, are something that anyone could afford, even if it's not practical. It's a more along the lines of something that is not a that it's not necessarily unearned. It doesn't necessarily have to be unearned, like a talent is. Like a talent is more of a, I guess, privilege. Like it's something that you're born with that you can't deny that you have. Even if you choose not to capitalize on it, you still have it, and it's a part of your being. Whereas these biological enhancements can be done to anybody. Now, I'm sure there is still a nexus where if you are already naturally talented and then we enhance you further, you'll still have the advantage. So acknowledging both of those things, I can see how on the best case scenario, say that wasn't true, because I don't know, I'm not a geneticist, but say that wasn't true, you know, if you had a talent, you can't further enhance it. There's just a limit, because I'm sure there is a limit to what a human body can do. Then these types of genetic engineerings could be a way we could level playing fields and give the option to those who would be willing to take it a leg up. And it could be it would open up more opportunities for people that would not have had that opportunity before. And at the worst, you end up with the exact same system. You just slide the bar up from where it used to be. Like what is considered extraordinary is now elevated because you've got talented people who could already barely touch that bar that are being genetically modified and can exceed it. And then you have people that were not talented before getting genetically modified and were able to be where the talented people were before or beyond, you know. And that's an interesting... So that's one of my arguments for looking at it from the, you know, what does it do for people who don't have the talent, you know, before or aptitude? It opens up opportunities for them. And it's at this point that I kind of do want to bring it away from sports and into more of the practical, regular, everyday realm, if that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be when you talk about vocations, you know, when you talk about the kinds of jobs that people can work. Anyone can feasibly do any job, but that doesn't mean you'll be good at it. There are certain people that have higher aptitudes for the skills required to perform a task or a job. These jobs and tasks and what they're worth, you know, how much these people get paid for doing these various jobs are not set by the people who do these jobs. You know, that's economics.
They sort of aren't.
For example, engineers will be paid more than contractors, even though they're working in roughly the same area. They deal with, like, take a civil engineer and then the lowly contractor that actually is out there scooping dirt. One is paid more than the other, and it's because of the skill level required by one, even if barely more than the contractor. This is my dig at civil engineers.
Even if the skill isn't really all that different, the scarcity. There are fewer civil engineers than contractors.
Exactly, and the scarcity. Now, I guess I would assert that scarcity is not necessarily... It's not necessarily artificial. I would say that scarcity occurs naturally.
Right.
Because it's a nexus of people not wanting to do it, A. Like, there are people who are just not interested, but then there's also... That's one half of the Venn diagram. And the other half of the Venn diagram, you have people who are interested, but incapable. And it could...
Right, or incapable with the amount of effort they're willing to put forth to do it.
Exactly. And then in the middle, you have people that are willing to put forth the effort and are interested, and that's who you would want to do that job anyway. So when it comes to people who are disinterested, they're choosing to be disinterested, or there's something else they can go do. But when we look at the people on the other end that are interested and just can't because... they don't have the skill set necessary, or they don't have, it would be too difficult for them to do it. When we look at how genetic engineering can play into that, I think that's where we're going to see more of the pushback and I could see it coming similar to the same reasons we talked about in competitive sports, but there's also other differences as well. For example, if you could use genetic engineering to make a person, And it would be an array of things that you're having to affect with this, and it's getting more complicated, but if you could give someone the ability to have a greater degree of focus, a greater degree of discipline and drive, you could encourage these personality traits from, well, drive is more personality, but the other one's more physical. If you can encourage the physical traits that make you better at doing certain jobs and make it easier for the type of person that you have to go ahead and adopt the traits that also lead you into that kind of work, you could work your, you could find your way into that job a lot easier than you could before. And so it might be feasible and it might be worth it to this person to take out a loan to get the therapy to do what they want and then achieve a higher paying job and then pay it back than it would be to just take the lower paying job. Because then they would both have a higher paying job and netting more money in their lifetime, but they would also arguably, because they have the option now made available to them, be happier over the course of their lifetime. The only, one of the biggest complaints I see coming out about this, and it's a complaint I've heard from somebody who I've discussed this with before, is that you're essentially just allowing wealthy people to do whatever they want, and then poor people will just be even more marginalized and stuck. And on and on and on, you know, from there. But in looking at it in that realm, you can't necessarily have divisions, you know, because you can't apply the same solutions you had in athletics, because in athletics you're already looking at a
right. We're in here in the real world. We're bound by physics and systems.
Yes, and
systems outside our control.
Exactly.
Sports. The world of sports is under our control.
Right. We set the rules.
We can decide. And if someone wants to go and be a rogue athlete, we can just bar them from official competitions. We can't stop them from playing a game, but, you know, we can stop recognizing what they're doing. We can't do that in the real world. There's real people with real things they have to do.
And there would be, I think, there's no way to argue that there would be a market incentive for people like this. You know, if I were wanting to hire, let's just take a very basic one. You can genetically engineer somebody to require less sleep. They can work double shifts regularly without great psychological stress. And they tell me that when they hire me, when I go to hire them. Would I rather pay two different people to cover 2 8-hour shifts or one person to cover a 16-hour shift and pay them 50% more than I would pay one person? So now I'm saving 50% of the salary. I have someone who's more skilled on staff all the time, and they are fine with doing it.
Depending on whether you're legally required to pay them time and a half after 8 hours.
Sure. I mean, other factors aside, let's just say I make them a salary employee, and fair. I don't offer comp time. So, yeah, I'm getting more out of it. They're getting more out of it because it doesn't matter to them. They want to grind it out until they're 45 and retire, and that's fine with me. I'm getting more out of it than I could expect from anyone else. There's definitely going to be a market incentive for people who are just now artificially just better at doing things.
Yep.
I can make more money and then pay them more for it. But now two people don't have a job.
Yes. And so here is where the ethical issue is raised, is that once you open the Pandora's box of genetic modifications, and arguably we already sort of have, but, and also as we have said many times before, information just wants to be free and you can't stop technology.
Right.
But all that notwithstanding, we find ourselves on the path to creating a real class system of people who are just better than everybody else.
And it's not like it was before where we just, because you can make the argument that this has already existed, but like, for example, you know, native populations versus colonial populations. Colonial populations were just better, but not because of themselves, but because of the technology they brought.
Technology they wielded, yes.
They wielded, and then the access to much more knowledge that was applicable in certain situations.
Right. They had a better situation they were in.
Right.
But they weren't necessarily better.
Right. But in this case,
they are actually better.
They are empirically just better.
And when we go all the way to the extreme, there could conceivably be a whole class of people who are just the smartest a person could be, the strongest a person could be, the most attractive a person could be, everything somebody wants to be, and they are that, and no one cares about anybody else.
Exactly. And not only that, but this system feeds itself.
Yes.
If you could become the strongest person a person could be, you gain more access to more resources
to make,
and then you can become also the smartest person a person can be and the strongest.
Yep.
And then now you got both, you can achieve even higher levels of income, and it snowballs. People that can the earlier in their life they can begin their upward trajectory can just shoot off.
And then we end up with a albeit slower version of the automation problem.
Yes.
Where, you know, machines fully outclass people and they're unemployable. So we have the class of the only people anyone cares about and the unemployables, yes. Basically.
And those who are going to be left out will be even more excluded and just even more unable to get in. And then even once you get in, you know, if I got an enhancement surgery a year before you did, if we both grinded as hard as we could, you would still never catch up.
Right.
Because I accelerated first. I began accelerating before you did. Ergo, my distance traveled will always be greater than yours, just because it is.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that there would not be benefits to the system. It's easy to look and see how it feels unfair.
I could definitely see benefits to it. I mean, if we can genetically engineer smarter people, then we can solve more problems faster. Big, important problems.
That affect everybody.
Yes.
Not just the smart people.
Right. The smart people will be making the money doing it, but we all benefit.
But we all benefit. And this, I mean, I think it would be also safe to say that even the smartest people know that wealth still has to come from somewhere.
Yep.
You know, even the dumbest unemployable people, at the end of the day, still have numbers on their side, and they have to be cared for in some way, shape, or form. Like, you still have to keep them from getting to the point where they just openly revolt. You know, any society knows that you need
that. That's true. You could easily see this, or conceive of this erupting into a massive, or, well, multiple wars.
Yes.
In which, you know, unaltered people, we will say, say, I don't care if you're better than me. I've got a weapon and I'm going to kill you because I don't like you.
And technology will always grow faster than our ability to modify people.
Yep.
And so it doesn't matter how strong you get. For every increment of strength you achieve, there's another two increments of a firearm or some weapon.
Exactly.
That can
kill you. It doesn't matter how much muscle mass you have. Critical tissue damage is still going to kill you.
Exactly. But that still presents a problem because no one wants to be there either.
No one wants that to happen.
But we're talking on the societal level at this point. And if we were to be gods that could just control a society, what would we do about it? But that's also impractical. You know, I think it's safe to say that once the cat's out of the bag, which arguably, like you said, it already is, you can't stop it. We just, you know, we'd be better off talking about a way to deal with it in a way that's safe. Letting these people do what they're going to do and finding a way to strike a new paradigm, which is what we'd have to do. That being said, I don't actually think that it's unfair. You know, I think, you know, on the individual level, I have no problem with it. It's your body. Do what you want. And I'll even point back to the example I made earlier. These things already exist, and you can even model this almost the way you can model wealth. The difference is you can't just take one thing away. You can't just take a person's ability away and give it to another person, but you can take their wealth, which can sometimes be used to supplement ability, you know. But I don't see any reason why it wouldn't be any different than the way we already treat it. And that is, if you were born into a situation in which you do not have the financial resources, that's why one of the greatest inventions or concepts humans ever come up with, the loan, exists. Get your own kickstart, take a risk, take the loan, and try to make the best of it. And in this case, it would be maybe spending money to become more genetically enhanced so that you could earn. Instead of, it would be way more of an actual investment in yourself than higher education.
Yeah,
sure,
student
is,
loans.
Sure is. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Instead of taking that huge loan and putting yourself under mountains of debt to go listen to people for a while and maybe learn a few things, literally make yourself a better person.
Literally. Yes. And it's also along the same lines of people who start businesses. You know, if you want to, that's one of the biggest ways loans are used that actually improve society, is people taking out loans to start businesses to cater to services and solve problems. Much more so than taking out a home loan because your 4-bedroom house is too small and you need a 5. That doesn't benefit society in the same way that a business loan does.
Right.
if you're arguing from the social perspective that way, I mean, from the individual perspective, I don't see why it matters. You can do whatever you want, and but that also comes with you having to deal with the consequences of whatever it is you chose to do. And who's to say there wouldn't be trade-offs anyway? You know, I think one of the lessons that human beings talk about all the time is just, you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch. You know, maybe these genetic modifications come with other downsides and you just have to weigh those for yourself. But I don't think that we should try to legislate these things away from people. I don't think we should take these options off the table, because otherwise all you're going to end up with is genetically modified super soldiers, police, and criminals that aren't going to obey the law anyway. And then you have the average person in between that now they're not just outclassed in the technology they have access to, but physically outclassed and mentally outclassed just because they've been denied access, you know? So again, all that being said, I don't think we should take, I think one of the worst things we could do is try to regulate this away from the average person.
Right.
Because you can see how
military-grade genetics.
Military-grade genetics. I want nuclear-grade genetics. NASA-grade. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, like, look at the things we've legislated away from people before, or tried to regulate away from people. One of the oldest and most classic examples is weapons. Anytime weapons get legislated or regulated away from the populace, it leads to tyranny. Every time. Just give it time. It'll get there. And I know there's some that'll argue with that, but I mean, it's a pretty hard argument to make that that's not the case. And I'm not saying there aren't some perhaps downsides to certain people's perspectives to an armed populace, but tyranny's worse. Firearms, particularly, the only people that have access to high grade firearms are people who already break the law and people who supposedly uphold it. You know, when we try to regulate things like the ability to read, that's an old thing, but that was a thing.
Yes, it was.
At one point in time, we did try to constrict the flow of information by restricting a person's ability to read.
Right. So now it doesn't matter if you have that book, you can't read it.
You can't read it.
So we can stay on top.
Right. And just look at the amount of corruptions that was able to cause, you know. And I'm looking at you, the Catholic Church, you know, keeping what the book says in your own language and keep it in Latin and not teach.
Oh, I was thinking American slavery, but
oh yeah, that's definitely worse. Yeah, that's way more recent. Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, that's terrible, you know. And I just think it's one of those things where you just kind of have to let people experience and let people try. And there will definitely be people that will abuse it and use it wrong, but at least they're just people. They're not people in power that can make it worse.
Right.
So, but yeah, like, to me, the current, and that's not to say, you know, and genetic modifications will obviously be used for things that are way more positive as well. I don't think anybody would agree that we should legislate away the use of genetic modifications to cure diseases. Because there's I mean, how else? That's probably going to be the way we deal with cancer.
Well, also, like, you know, actually, change my mind. Vaccines are biological enhancements. They're not genetic modifications. They are biological enhancements.
They are.
We put a thing in you, and because biology, you now have a permanent resistance to that thing.
Yeah, you're using a system your body already has, but you're giving it blueprints to its enemy, the disease, so that it can be more prepared to fight that disease later.
And nobody thinks this is a bad thing unless they don't understand how vaccines work.
Sure. woof. Yeah, and when you look at certain diseases that are by their very nature genetic, cancer, you know, I may be using the word disease wrong here, but like afflictions.
I think that counts as a disease.
Yeah. I mean, cancer is a genetic, essentially, flaw that grows into something way worse.
Although normally that happens because of a mutation that occurred.
It can, but what if there were genetic modifications that could increase the resolve of your DNA, that decrease the... Because there are species that can handle these mutations and then correct for them.
Yep.
if we were able to achieve that same ability, goodbye cancer. I don't see anyone saying, well, we shouldn't let people be
no,
cured.
No, look at
cancer,
how many, look
know?
At how many cure cancer foundations there are.
Exactly.
Charities. It's like, this is a, obviously a top priority for a lot of people.
And it doesn't sound like it, but that makes you a empirically better person.
Right, you're objectively better. There is one less thing in the universe that will kill you.
Yes, and even though it may seem small, it still is an enhancement. It makes you better. Even if it's expensive, it makes you better. And they're the same thing. Now, granted, the purpose may be different, like the person's intentions may be different, but the moment we start trying to regulate along the lines of intentions, I mean, you're already in woo-woo land as far as I'm concerned. You know, it shouldn't matter what you plan to do with something necessarily. That what you're planning to do with it shouldn't really matter once you've got it. Or shouldn't preclude your access to it,
right.
I should say. That's something we have to deal with when the time comes, you know. But back on the societal level even, I think, well, let's talk about, I think, what would be the greatest genetic modification we could make, and that would be some form of maybe not immortality, but dramatically increase both lifespans and quality of life into advanced ages.
Right.
The
anti-aging,
yes. Yeah. Beyond just the cosmetic, you know, because that's like the biggest...
But real biological anti-aging.
Right.
Freeze yourself at 25 or whatever.
Yeah. But not mentally. Like not... Like you don't keep... You can still gain knowledge, but you...
Yes.
Don't deteriorate.
Biologically, but not statefully. Like... Yes. Even though there's a blurry line between those, but...
But that's one of the biggest areas because... The amount of investment required to obtain an expert... with 20 years experience is 20 years. You can't shorten it. You just can't. The amount of, and I don't mean like textbook knowledge, I mean experience.
Yes.
Firsthand, been
there.
If you
need somebody who's been doing this for 20 years, they have to have done it for 20 years.
Exactly. And that is valuable. Yeah. When that person dies, all of that potential and all of that stored knowledge, and not just, and when I say knowledge, again, I don't mean, like, they could write a book about it and transfer some of that knowledge, but...
It's not the same as doing it.
It's not the same.
There's something to be said about that, and I heard that this was on one of the shows that I listened to on the radio about psychology, that we have this idea that we can get experience from watching other people, and you kind of can't.
No.
You know, when, you know, let's take a simple skill, like, I don't know.
I was going to say surgeon, but that's not a very simple skill.
No. Auto repair.
Okay.
Lots of auto maintenance is not all that complicated, and anyone could do it if they just knew how. Cool. You can pull up your favorite video hosting platform and search up how to do the thing, and you can watch it. And you know more about it than you did before, but that doesn't mean you can actually get in there and do it.
Right. Exactly.
This is especially the case of, like, manual skills. Like, the thing that's popping into my head for some reason is soldering.
Yeah,
I can watch videos of people soldering, but that is no substitute for actually putting the iron in my hand and giving me a roll of solder and having me actually put something together.
Right. The amount of variables that you have to deal with in each situation are just so vastly different that there are some things that only if you've dealt with it before do you really have an understanding of how you need to compensate.
Actually, here's a good analogy. Okay, go on YouTube and look for like a piano tutorial of pick your favorite song.
Yep.
Doesn't matter. Okay, cool. Find a keyboard, watch that video until you've got the whole thing memorized. Now sit in front of the keyboard and play it. I dare you. You can't do it.
And here's the thing. Even if you could, all right, here's song number two.
Right.
yes, memorization is one of the lowest forms of being educated. It really is. And some people call it intuition, but I don't like that word, but they're well,
intuition is definitely different from memorization too.
It is, but that's what I'm saying is in your intuition is something you have to hone with experience, I would say. And when I say intuition, I mean your ability to discern the differences between your situation that you're having now and a situation you've experienced before, and being able to make adjustments that are much better calculated than somebody who's never experienced either.
Yep.
You know, and that's why I'm going back to the difference in variables. I may have dealt with something similar to this before, but it is different. Now, I have a leg up on the person who's never dealt with either situation because I can approach the problem starting with some baseline assumptions and how my experiences have went. Like, I can call them back, and I can, and my deltas for how to deal with the situation will be a lot shorter than the person who's coming at this fresh and having to learn up to this point to deal with the situation. But yeah, I mean, we could go on at length talking about the advantages of keeping a person alive that has this type of experience.
Yes.
But I don't think we'd really have to convince anybody. You know, we could go on at length, but I can't really conceive of somebody who would disagree necessarily, or at least not after a long conversation having explained it. But every year you extend, like, I mean, when he died, Stephen Hawking, when he died, you know, people talked about how great a mind he was and everything. And that's true. But every year you get out of him is so much more valuable. It's an exponential increase in value.
Right, because he's someone who's got a whole career behind him.
Yes.
Of doing that.
1 year, it goes like this. If you have 30 years experience, 1 year is 30 years experience
and one
over a year.
Yep.
If you have 10 years experience and you do 1 year, you're applying 10 years of experience in 1 year. His experience is worth three times as much as yours. And then his
next... It doesn't exactly scale linearly like that, but...
No, not really. But it's still... And I actually would assert that it probably approaches a limit and peters off.
Right.
But...
At some point, you really have just seen everything, but...
Yes.
Well, maybe not when it comes to theoretical physics, but...
But you still...
But most practical jobs.
Or you may have worked yourself into a point where your mind is no longer really able to... Your mind gets made up.
Yeah, that's true. Eventually, you're going to run into physical limits of the brain as well, where experience can no longer be valuable to you.
Right, or...
Who knows how long that takes, though.
Your way of thinking about a problem may be so ingrained and trained... And how
you
to deal with
undo it.
You can undo it and approach it from a different perspective. But even if that's the case, you can take multiple people that have approached it with all long periods of experience. And that's why people get so fascinated to watch these experts get together and talk. And their conversations are so lengthy because they're both having to unravel their many years of experience.
Decades, yes.
Decades to address the same problem. Now, there's almost no way that wouldn't bring about benefit to everyone. And we would see acceleration in the human ability, not the same we see the acceleration of technological advancement, but it would keep the human endeavor into addressing problems more relevant longer and might put us in a better place for when we do reach the singularity. You know, I mean... One of the big fears we have is if we do create an artificial superintelligence is that we are way off from where it will end up or where we think it will end up because we just can't compute and comprehend what a superintelligence is. We don't have it. But the closer we are and the closer we are to that, I think the closer we can get it to where we would actually want it to be and be beneficial. And I do think, you know, some of the other benefits that are way more practical. If I could have one person doing the job of four people for half the price, you know, I mean, the market will adjust in a way that really drives down I think it would really drive down the prices of any good in which any field in which you have people that are being genetically modified. And I think it would actually affect higher air quote skill jobs first. Instead of, you know, you're not going to see factory workers necessarily getting ousted, I don't think, as much, where it's not so much you need strong people, you just need a lot of them. Any field or
most factory jobs are about supervision than it is about raw skill.
Yeah, you don't need, like, the amount of money it would cost to employ a person who can pay closer attention than it would someone who can just pay attention probably isn't worth it. But when you're looking at fields like surgeons, you know, physicists, astronauts, these really peak, very small fields, any little gains you get there go a lot further. So it would be justified to hire a surgeon that doesn't get sleepy after a 9-hour long knee replacement. They're just as awake and focused. Their hands are steadier. They have much more finesse in their motor control, you know? And so that goes a lot further than it would for low skill jobs. So I don't necessarily think you'd see the same impact that you would with automation necessarily. Granted,
No, it's not the same.
No, it's not the same.
It takes us on a similar journey, but it doesn't go quite to the same place.
Exactly. Plus, who's to say that, I mean, with anything else that we've come across and invented or improved upon, the sooner you start, the sooner it becomes available for everyone. Anyone can eat GMO corn. Actually, that's kind of the point of GMO corn.
So that everyone can eat it.
So yes. Everyone can eat it. You make more of it. You know, cars. We all drive cars. Well, in the United States anyway, most people drive a car. And it's within very reasonable realm of possibility that you can afford one. And it's, and part of it is due to the hand-me-down effect, and that may not necessarily be the same, it may not be as applicable to genetic modifications, which are more unique. But as we improve, you know, like, I forget how it was said, but the real technological advancement doesn't come from when you discover or create something new, it's when you can then mass-produce it. But you don't get to the mass-producing
Right, imagine
stage.
A world where we have so many, you know, highly skilled and technically capable surgeons that brain surgery just isn't a big deal.
No, it's just, it's no
you
different.
Walk into like the clinic.
Yeah.
And get it done.
Exactly. But what I'm talking about is, you know, say I'm going to come up with a theoretical invention that helps us do what we're talking about.
Right.
I'm going to call it the genetic typewriter. Say we come up with the genetic typewriter. And so, because there's the other issue with this is each to achieve the same outcome, you have to do the same amount of work that you did on person one that you do on person two, because we're already starting off in different places.
Yep.
But the longer we do it, the more we do it, the more we can come up with shortcuts that...
Right, generalizations. That work.
Yep. That work. So the sooner we come up with this typewriter, it might take months to generate the genetic sequence you need to modify that person to do what you want. And then take years for those to... You inject these new cells... And it takes years for them to reproduce into a point where they now occupy a majority of that part of your body you want enhanced.
And even longer for the actual effect of the gene to surface, yeah.
Exactly. So we start there, and we can understand kind of how this works much better. And then once our understanding grows, the sooner we can do it. And then, because I actually don't think, even though it's easier, I don't think designer babies will come first because of the risk associated. And don't get me wrong, you do get a massive advantage when the younger you are, the bigger your advantage to get this. Because when you only have a cluster of cells that make up your bicep, it's a lot easier. You only have to inject two or three. That's a much greater percentage of the total. And you can see the effect happen a lot faster, and they will grow along the rate with everything else. But you take someone who's 50, they may not live long enough to see the real benefit. It takes a long time to see these benefits. But the sooner we get started, it might be cutting edge at first. It may only be that the ultra wealthy are able to afford it. The early adopters in any field. You know, I spend a lot of money on the graphics card that I have in my computer, and I get crap for it all the time. Because I spent two to three times as much for a 20% performance boost over the current existing product. Some people are like, no way, not doing it, I'm out. And I can respect that. But I just paid for the development and research that went into making that possible, so that now, in a few years, it's much more mass producible, and then people can pay less. The people that pay for the privilege to get it first are paying for, they're footing the bill for the further development to make it mass producible.
The economy of scale to kick in. Yep.
Yes. And so You know, and that's a pretty charitable view of looking at people with vast resources buying into these things first, but that's, someone's going to have to pay for it. You know, it's, no one's going to create these genetic modification machines out of nothing. There has to be a financial incentive. And even it, and if it comes at the, that is an interesting thing about though, because if they do get it first, they're going to get, okay, let's walk through this hypothetical scenario on over time. We're going to sum the population down into the population of 100 people just to make it real easy to deal with. One person controls the vast majority of resources in this case, or they control a lot of the resources. So they get the genetic modification first. Now, it works out great. There's some hiccups, but they were able to deal with it. This person achieves the biological immortality. You can still be hit by a bus and die, but whatever, you know. And the strength and the thing, whatever. So they will have, say they purchase 10 years of this. They have a 10-year monopoly on it just because of the time it takes to make this technology applicable to a wider market of people and get the price down to where now your next 20% can afford it. If you look at the difference in advantage that person had at the beginning, they may have had a, say, a 50% advantage over the next quartile, you know. Over 10 years, that advantage must have grown by a large margin. Or maybe they are already at the theoretical cap of what the market can support, and they just kind of keep, they just bump the ceiling as the ceiling rises. I don't know.
Sure.
But then these next 20% get it, and then they start moving up. And then 5 years later, because it's accelerating, the next 30%, no, yeah, the next 30% get it, and then the next 40% get it. And I think that gets us 20, 30, 40, 50. Then the next 50% get it. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. It's, yeah, 49%, whatever. Then everyone else gets it. So at the moment, everyone else gets it, and they begin their upward trajectory. They begin accelerating, but the person who's continuously accelerated before is reaching even a higher peak on the curve. Now, granted, I'm assuming there's a theoretical maximum here. They'll hit the maximum way before these other people do. And it will actually, I think, in the short term, and when I say short term, this may be centuries, but in the term period right after that, you will see, I think, a growth in the difference between the people that can afford it early and the people that can afford it later, because these benefits feed into themselves and cause your acceleration on the societal, you know, socioeconomic chart to accelerate.
Yeah.
But I think if you, I think the real key is if we zoom out over the time span of eons, if you can find the theoretical limit on the time scale of centuries, it won't matter, because now anyone, right,
there will be a weird transition period. Yeah, and then we'll hit equilibrium.
And then it will hit equilibrium. And then once the theoretical ceiling is reached, it doesn't matter when you started. If you live long enough, you'll eventually get there too. And then everyone will be that way. And we'll see this weird shift where we may not even be recognizably human anymore, but we'll be a different species that we're all at this new level. And the concepts of talent may not exist anymore. And that would be interesting. It's a weird egalitarian project right there. That's an interesting thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have anything you want to expand on that, or just kind of want to leave it hanging there?
I'm okay with that. That was an interesting discussion.
Very, very much so. Well, until next time, philosophers.
Philosophers.